Long live the caucus convention system. This is Dan McKay on the right.
Death to the convention. This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Super glue has no place at the caucus convention system. This is Matt Lusty filling in for Natalie Gochner. I'm the moderate middle. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, but first, this news. Welcome out to Both Sides of the Aisle. My name is Matt Lusty. I'm filling in for Natalie Gochner. I represent the moderate middle, and we are going to start today introducing the individual to the left.
Oh, I'm Jim DeBacchus.
And we're going to go to the right. I have Dan McKay with me. Dan, thanks for being on.
Good morning, Matt. How are you? I know that Jim is confused because he's to the right of me today, which, you know, does kind of mess him up a little bit.
He's a little confused. We were talking about the governor's election, and he said, Dan, before the show, that he'd actually vote for you for governor. So that's kind of an interesting talking point to start the show.
Yeah.
Well, over the two Republican choices, no question, Dan, I'm going to write in in the Republican primary, Dan McKay.
Good. There's two votes, mine and Jim's. So now we'll wait for everybody else to come along.
Okay, now we want to talk about the convention. We want to talk about what's happened with the governor, but we're going to do just a quick check-in on what's going on nationally. Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump had a great night last night, or this week, right? So we're talking right now about what they did. Jim, you've been saying all along that the Trump train is moving along and the Republicans just need to get prepared for it. Are you continuing that thought?
They're in denial. They are in denial. It's going to happen. And I tell you what it's going to do to Utah. The west side of Salt Lake County is going to turn blue in a tidal wave. We're going to win some Senate seats. And things are going to change for in the biggest measure since 1964. Republicans aren't going to show up. They know Donald Trump. They realize he's a vulgar doofus. And while they may not be thrilled with Hillary, they're just not going to show up. Democrats are going to be energized. And in every place where there is where there's some reasonable amount of play from the gerrymandering, Democrats are going to win. It's going to be a big year.
You like how I just let him go?
Yeah.
It's like you wind up a top and you just like let it go, right? And he can believe it. And I want Jim to live in the fantasy world that all of those things are going to happen. Look, at some point, we are going to come to a nominee. It's possible, I'm getting there now, that Trump is the nominee for the Republican ticket. But it is not going to affect local races the way my friend Jim hopes it is. Mia is going to get out the vote. There's going to be plenty of people excited to vote in November. And as a result, I'm sorry, Jim, we're actually going to take one more seat back from you.
In Congress?
Okay. So moving on, there's a quick kind of understory that I want to touch on that, you know, results from Trump winning. And that is there's a Cruz-Kasich alliance going on right now, and it seems to be failing. Is that kind of not resounding with voters? Let's start with you, Dan.
I think when the way they came out with it and the way things were done, it just looked desperate.
Let's team up to lose.
Yeah, let's team up. Well, and it was team up to lose, but it was like, okay, we realize that without each other, we can't win. And that's, you know, a subtle truce between the two of them. But this was a decision that should have been made 2-3 months ago, not like today or yesterday or whenever, you know, a couple days ago. It should have been made then. And unfortunately, I think it's too little too late because now it just looks desperate.
So I want to ask you, Jim, is this going to prevent Donald Trump from taking the nomination outright? Are we going to see a contested convention or do you think he's going to get there?
What a dumb strategy. Do people really think Lion Ted's people are going to go over to Kasich and vice versa? These two candidates are on opposite sides of the universe. And just because one isn't campaigning in the other, I'm telling you, those Kasich people are not voting for Lion Ted. It was just poorly thought out in the first place, and now they look like idiots.
You like that, Lion Ted.
I was
going to
say,
like that?
Jim is adopting Trumpisms right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting worried about you.
What would
Jim?
We do in Utah? Think of a name for Herbert.
Gentleman Herbert.
Gentleman Herbert.
Come on. Okay. You can't argue with that label. There is nothing about Governor Herbert that doesn't make him a gentleman. You can say anything you want about his policies, anything else, but you well know the man's a gentleman.
I would love to have Gary Herbert as my next door neighbor.
No.
He just is as kind Absolutely. And decent and nice a guy as
yep.
you'd want to have.
All day long.
On that personal level, he'd be making you warm bread and he'd be shoveling your snow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Okay, well, this is a good segue because I actually want to talk about the governor's race. We just saw in the convention this last week that Governor Herbert couldn't get 60% of the delegates. He's forced into a primary. And not only could he not get 60% of the delegates, you know, Overstock Chairman Jonathan Johnson actually had more delegates. So, Dan, let's start with you. You were at the convention.
Yeah. Let's
talk about what did you see there? You're kind of the eyes on the ground, the eyes on the street right now. What was the feeling at the convention?
It was really interesting. You've got, you know, obviously the delegates are there, and it's a big environment, and everybody's in the Salt Palace, and, you know, it's kind of got that convention feeling to it. I will tell you, much like in, was it 2012, when Senator Hatch was giving out cowboy hats, right? I don't know if you remember. Well, you didn't.
I wasn't there.
So Senator Hatch was giving out cowboy hats, right? And okay. And that was his thing. He was giving out cowboy hats. And I remember when they get to the floor of the convention. I'm really shocked you weren't there, Jim. So that being at the Republican convention. That being said, Orrin Hatch had these cowboy hats that he was giving out, and it was amazing because when it came time to vote, everybody had their hats on. I mean, throughout the convention, there were hats everywhere, and so I knew at that point Senator Hatch was probably going to be okay, right? Governor Herbert, on the other hand, was also giving out cowboy hats. And when it came time to vote, not a hat to be seen.
So you're bringing up something really interesting because Dave Hansen is the campaign manager for Jonathan Johnson. And he said, I knew that we were going to be okay because I didn't see a lot of cowboy hats. And so it's interesting to hear that same thought. You know, I'm mixing up names. State Senator Jim DeBacchus, let's go to you with your thoughts on cowboy hats and Governor Herbert not getting enough delegates to being forced into a primary.
Best evidence to just nuke the whole delegate caucus kooky system. We're the only state left with this kooky system. I walked into the Republican convention.
Despite the Ohio caucuses, the Colorado caucuses,
they're different.
And the Iowa caucuses.
They're different.
Of course they're different, but Democrats are different in those states,
too. It is such a... The GOP... I understand why they're going to court to keep this caucus system, because they represent one thing, themselves. This fringy, loopy... they voted for nullification.
You mean
by voice vote, and the nullification says that if somebody doesn't believe in their heart, I guess, that the federal constitution applies, then they don't have to do it, and then pass by voice vote.
Wait,
I say,
are you talking
whole crazy convention, no wonder James Evan wants to keep it, because it keeps the loony birds running the Republican candidates.
Terrible
system.
Until you just said Republican, I thought you were talking about the Democratic convention. because you guys had two guys running for governor. One, you know, belt high fastball, moderate, Mormon, non-pot smoking guy running for governor. And you kick him out of convention to take the pot smoking, you know, ultra extreme positions, and you're saying we have a problem. I love that you think that's the case, because when you look in the mirror, my friend, one of these mornings you're going to realize we're not the only ones with extremists taking over the party.
No. I got to respond. Oh. Do away with the convention system on both sides. I just want to make it clear. Michael Weinhold said he does not smoke pot. His wife.
That's true.
His wife is, and I know Donna
alleged
very well. She gets in a terrible, terrible situation, curls up in a ball, and the choice is: should I go to OxyContin, which is perfectly legal in our state, and to doctors that will give her that and keep her in an utter stupor, maybe for the rest of her life? Or she gets relief from medical marijuana. And I say the voters and the people of Utah aren't going to hold that against her. And as a matter of fact, it might even be a campaign issue, Gary Herbert. Where are you on medical marijuana? And let's get the stupid government out of the lives of suffering people.
Well, that seems to be that there's a conversation going on. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation on what happened at the state conventions last week. There's a lot to discuss. Stay with us.
Dan McKay, I'm right.
And I'm Jim DeBacchus, I'm left.
And I'm Matt Lusty, I'm the moderate middle. I'm sitting in for Natalie Gochner today. And before we went to our break, we were talking about the state convention, and we haven't got a chance really to go over much of the Democrat side. Mike Weinholz is the gubernatorial nominee for the Democrats. We talked a little bit about how let's do this, better yet. Jim, you were there. Let's talk about how he came onto stage to receive that nomination. Do you want to talk about that?
Okay. First, Michael Weinholz is the dream of every Republican. Unlike Gary Herbert, who's been a government bureaucrat since who knows what and taken that kind of a job, Michael got here with a $20 million company, built it up into $1.5 billion company, created not just jobs, but thousands of jobs paying $75,000 to $150,000 a year. He's done what so many of the wah-wah guys like Mike Lee, the senator who's always one step in the bankruptcy court, always talk about. Mike Weinholz has actually done it. And here's how he started the convention. He started the convention by coming out and saying, I believe in transparency. I believe in honesty. I think the delegates have the right to know that my wife is being investigated for the use of medical marijuana. Now, talk about being upfront and courageous and getting that information out. Good on you, Michael.
People over politics. This campaign commercial is brought to you by Jim DeBacchus. We are now going to go over to Dan McKay, and we're going to talk about Mike Weinholz from the perspective of the right.
I actually was impressed by Mike. Our conventions were held in the same place. I love when we actually do this. We were both in the Salt Palace. We were in kind of the main convention area down on the lower steps, and there was a break room around the corner where the Democratic party was meeting, and 10 of them were kind of gathered there eating snacks, and they were brownies, oddly enough. And Mike gave a speech, and honestly, I listened to a speech, and I thought a lot of him. I thought it was a really interesting speech. I don't know him well enough. I still think he doesn't break 40% by any standards.
Now, it's kind of interesting to bring that up because Governor Gary Herbert enjoys one of the highest approval ratings that the state's ever seen.
Yeah.
Yet there's been some difficult time in the convention. We had a discussion about the convention being something interesting. My perspective is it really brings out some extreme views on both ends, right? And I don't know if that really appeals to everyone, because when you break out into the 600,000 voters for the Republican primary, it's not going to be. I mean, Jonathan Johnson hammered Governor Herbert on education. Common Core, right? We're talking about that. We heard that so much. We also heard, tax hikes. I'm not going to raise taxes anymore. And I think the same thing happens a little bit on the left. Let's get out and let's legalize medical marijuana, and things become a little bit more extreme. My perspective is maybe that's not, as Jim was saying, maybe the convention's not the way to go. But I want to talk about, Dan, you're nodding your head. What's your thought on that? You're shaking your head.
The argument
bit.
Obviously is these delegates go and meet with the candidates, and the candidates tell them what they think is important. And it becomes the delegates' position, in my mind, to decide whether or not that's actually important. And so you look at, I can't remember the number, but it was some high percentage of these delegates are brand new.
Yeah.
In other words, delegates that hadn't been delegates before. And so if there's that much turnover, because during the Hatch year that he ran, there was a bunch of turnover then. And so you could argue with that much turnover going on in these delegates, it may be the candidates that are training the delegates to think about these specific issues. And as a result, they then see them as important. And then they're more extreme than their neighbors because they've been to meetings and talked to the candidates, as opposed to the alternative, which is they sat at home, they got a couple mailers, they watched the news and decided based on what that might be as to who their president or who's their governor or whatever the other statewide race is going to be. I would argue, but he says they're not more intelligent. I don't know if there's an intelligence quotient to it. What I think, though, is that delegates themselves do actually meet face-to-face with the candidate, and they do get that. They do take that time. Now, whether or not that's valuable, because, Jim wants to say these delegates are extreme. I want to argue maybe the candidates are, maybe represent extreme positions. But you can look at both ways, and you can say at least in this caucus convention scenario, they're meeting with the candidate, which is totally different than just retail politics where they're receiving a flyer or a mailer and moving on.
See, the intention to meet with the candidate is good. I thought you were going to say that the delegates were different from the original Hatch years. And I was going to say, well, yeah, we're talking a while ago.
Actually,
now.
You'd be surprised. A lot of those guys that were there on Saturday were around when Senator Hatch was first elected.
So. Interesting. Jim, what's your take?
time to end this whole dumb 1896 idea of empowering a few little tiny important people. You know, Gary Herbert ought to be the 74% popularity rate, very high among Republicans. Who are these people anyway? They're crazies that are for nullification and go down the list of what they believe in. They're just eccentric people that are involved in the process.
You
they don't help
that want
Utah.
Full government health care, who want complete access to medical. You're right. These
free
people,
college.
Free college. I mean, let's go down the list. You're right. On both sides.
I'm saying doing away. I say do away with the convention delegate system.
Okay. Now you mentioned something crazy. You said crazy, and I want to talk about something crazy that happened at the convention. The Republican convention started an hour late because the governor's trailer was glued shut. What was that all about, Jim? Let's go to you.
I had nothing to do with that. They ran a scanner across my fingers, no super glue, but I did notice this. At Overstock.com had a big sale on super glue the weekend before. Yeah. I am not casting aspersions. And how ridiculous. It's like 13-year-old boys, really. Somebody snuck in and glued the Herbert trailer so they couldn't get their signs out and the convention had to be delayed an hour. Hello, boys. This is not like a fraternity house. This is serious business.
I didn't know about the glue incident, the great,
the
glue
great
gate.
Glue incident.
Yeah,
glue gate.
I didn't know about
glue
gate. But when I could see in the morning when the convention was first getting started out, I'm the campaign manager for John Dougal, the state auditor, and we were unloading all, got his stuff all up, and then we're there watching the Herbert folks, and they were extremely flustered, and you could tell there was some frustration. Now that Gluegate comes out, I see it.
But not that they've been sniffing it. You're not going in that.
No,
direction.
No, no, no. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, no, no.
We're not going to legalize glue sniffing.
No. Actually, I think that's already legitimate.
Oh, you can already do that.
I think it's already legit. But anyways, that being said, it is somewhat suspicious that there was a sale on Super Glue at the Overstock website, and we probably ought to look more into that.
Okay. We're staying on the theme of local. I want to talk for a minute about the Salt Lake Tribune, and I want to talk with Jim about this to start with, because it says Paul Huntsman has agreed to buy the Tribune, but I know that you've been involved in that a little bit and talked about maybe purchasing the Tribune with your deep pockets, Jim. So I want to get your take on this, and you can give us an inside scoop about what's happening at the Tribune.
So look, since the 50s, the community has been a third partner in this newspaper thing. The Deseret News was going out of business, and the two newspapers went to Washington and said, we want to operate as a monopoly. They're the only companies in Utah that has allowed a state-sanctioned monopoly. And as a result, they made millions and millions and millions of dollars by fixing prices legally. And they made millions of dollars by doing away with any possible competition. Now, many years later, the hedge fund that owns the Tribune sat down with Deseret News Publishing, and they made a deal where Deseret News Management got a giant check, and the hedge fund just went into eternal bliss to change the operating agreement, which gave 57% of the revenue to the Tribune down to 30%. At 30%, the Deseret News Publishing Company knew that the Salt Lake Tribune could not survive. Everybody knew that. So in effect, you had Deseret News Publishing putting themselves in a position where they could control either letting the Tribune go out of business because they couldn't go on the 30%, or forcing somebody else who wanted to buy the Tribune to come to them to change back that arrangement.
So this is where you come
in. It turns out that that's illegal.
Oh, interesting.
You cannot conspire with your competitor to put him out of business in exchange for money. It's not allowed.
Interesting.
What the Department of Justice now is looking at and has been for 2 years is what the Deseret News and the hedge fund did. Was that a conspiracy and was it illegal? Because what's happened now is the Deseret News has said, hey, we got ourselves an owner and we're all happy. Well, the third partner in this little marriage, the Department of Justice hasn't decided yet if they're going to make indictments on the criminal matter or they're just going to walk away from this 2-year investigation. And what I'm saying is the Tribune needs an independent owner. It needs one that can portray the voice of the community with this yin and yang that have been there for 140 years. And I am not sure that having the Huntsman family, who have very strongly known political views, as well as very close ties to the LDS Church and presumably to Deseret News Publishing, I'm not sure that serves the community. Our group is four pillars of the community and me. These are people with huge net worths that are willing to go in and guarantee that the newspaper decisions will be made independently by journalists and the editorial positions will be progressive. One of my prospective partners, a man with hundreds of millions of dollars, said, "Debakis, you realize if we catch your hand in the cookie jar, you're going to be on the front page." And I said, "I don't want to be part of it unless it's that way." So in Deseret News' mind, it has all worked out. There's still more to be heard on this, and stay tuned.
Dan, what's your thought about that epilogue that State Senator DeBakis just gave?
I fell asleep. I got to be honest. It was a little bit difficult to follow.
That's why
little...
I said your name three times.
I appreciate you waking me up.
Wake up.
Because that was tough. But, yeah, I don't know. This secret Illuminati agreement that, the Des News and the Tribune were in this conspired thing so that the Des News can issue newspaper-assisted suicide to the Salt Lake Tribune. That doesn't necessarily cut it, Jim. I'm sorry. Like, I'm trying to get the smell test going. The thing is, I know you're really close to it, so, you probably know it better than I do. I just look at it and say, from the outside looking in, it sounds like the Tribune is hemorrhaging cash and doesn't have the heeled owner that, this is one of the reasons that newspapers are in flight right now to find people that are willing to buy them that are well-heeled. It's because they can't afford their day-to-day operations because circulation is dropping and online circulation is increasing. And as a result, content, all that stuff is being driven online and you don't see as much sales revenue from that. So blah, 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 blah. Nobody cares. But I think... We are better for having, two papers competing. I just don't know that we have the population to support both circulations.
Now, that's my take, too. I agree with you I agree with Jim. We need an independent voice, but we want to make sure that we can support that. Now, you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, but we also want to hear from you. We don't just want to hear ourselves talk. If you have a question or a comment or a topic that you'd like to hear us debate on this program, send us an email to comments@kcpw.org. You can also leave us a voice message by calling 801-359-5279, extension 200. Now, we are in our last 3 minutes of the program, meaning we are going to talk about gripes, and we are going to start with Jim today.
I have no gripes today. It's a beautiful day. Spring is arriving. We've got great candidates. We're going to have a terrific political season. I think I'm just a happy guy. No gripe today. It's official. Donate money to KCPW, and the world will be a great place.
That's interesting. I've never heard you not have a gripe, Jim, so that is interesting. We're going to go over to Dan.
Jim, it's always tough to be behind you. I always want to go first because even when you're not griping, you sound great. Okay, so my gripe is Jim. No, okay. He did say that it would be good to give money to KCPW, and I agree with you. I'll just throw that plug in there. But my gripe this month or this week is social media. It's amazing how echo chamber the social media world becomes. You think you're actually communicating people. You're really not. You're talking to a group of like 5 or 10 people who listen to your stuff and you listen to them. And pretty soon you're trapped in a box. And unfortunately, you keep hearing your own echo back at you. And I'll be honest, social media is not a productive conversation. Please stop putting long diatribes about what you feel about one issue or another or that kind of thing and think that that is all you need to do for political participation. I would say, come to a meeting, listen to a candidate, be involved, go and talk to somebody, go knock a door, go get a neighbor that's right across the street and introduce yourself because you haven't met him, you've been on social media. I'd say get outside yourself. That's my gripe.
I appreciate that. Jim sometimes gets in trouble when he says things that he shouldn't on social media.
I've never said anything bad.
Never anyway.
You should see his bad filter. It's really small.
Yeah.
So just really quickly, the gripe that I want to share is this. As much as I think it's kind of funny and a childish prank, my gripe is that the governor's truck got glued shut. I mean, come on, we're at a state convention. You know, maybe it was the Democrats from the other side trying to frame Jonathan Johnson. Maybe it was something other entirely uninvolved. But I just feel like, come on, we don't need to do that. Anyway, this has been Both Sides of the...
What a brave statement, huh? You know, we shouldn't glue each other's trucks. I mean, there's a... That's the whole problem with the middle, right?
Oh, my gosh.
That's the gripe. We shouldn't glue each other's trucks.
Listen, the mousetrap springs shouldn't be so tight.
What a terrible thing. I know.
I'm just saying something everyone can agree with. Maybe it was you that did that gluing. Anyway, you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Our producer is Roger McDonough. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.